Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Most of the best moments in my life happened during camping trips. My mother was an avid nature lover and worked as an environmental consultant. She made sure to pass on her love and passion for nature to me and my siblings.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
As long as I can remember, I've been surrounded by nature. We lived close to the woods when I was a kid, and my mother would take us on camping trips every weekend. These camping trips in the forest were my childhood. I remember all the steps to set up the tent and the best type of wood to start a fire. I also remember the scary stories we told around the fire while eating roasted s'mores. After we'd finish our s'mores, my mom would put out the fire, and we would watch the stars as I fell asleep in her arms. As I said in the beginning, those were the happiest days of my life. But as the saying goes, all good things must come to an end. My father was a very different person from my mother. He rarely came on any of our camping trips, and when he did, he didn't participate in any of the activities and stayed at the tent until it was time to go home. My father was one of those men who married his work, putting nothing above it. I couldn't really tell during my younger years, but as I grew older, I realized it was putting a massive strain on my parents' marriage. They managed to stay together for most of my childhood, but it wasn't long before their marriage finally broke down. It was a very messy divorce. Both my parents wanted custody of my siblings and me, and neither of them was going to budge. At the end of it all, my father managed to get full custody of me. Once the divorce had been finalized, our family was torn apart. I moved to a new house in the city with my father, and my siblings stayed back home with mom. It took me a while to adjust as I had never been a city kid. Changing schools was also hard, and it was one of the hardest periods of my life. Things got better as the years passed by. It was difficult, but I eventually managed to make friends, and it wasn't long before I was a senior in high school. I remember being ecstatic about my last year of high school. A lot of years had passed since the divorce, and I managed to move on from it, but I still couldn't move past my love for camping. None of my friends were as enthusiastic about camping as I was. I knew it was because they grew up in the city, but I wanted to share the joy of camping with them. It's been so many years, so I can't really remember the exact date. But I know it happened a week before graduation. I had planned a camping trip that week with three of my friends. It wasn't easy, but I managed to get them on board. Even after getting them all to agree, I still had one more person to convince, and that was Natasha. Her full name was Natasha Lopez. I'd met her during English class in the sixth grade, and I had a crush on her ever since. Before the trip, I'd spoken to her about camping before, and I knew Natasha wasn't a fan of the outdoors. I remember a particular conversation with Nat, where she told me that our generation wasn't built for the forest. I knew the odds weren't in my favor, as I planned to convince someone who hated camping to go on a camping trip. It was a daunting task, but after a lot of talking and persuasion, Natasha finally agreed. With Natasha on board, all that was left to do was the preparations. As I said earlier, people in my city didn't go camping, so none of my friends had any camping gear. Due to this, I had to get everyone's tents and camping supplies. Once that was settled, I borrowed Uncle's old RV and cleaned it out. The nearest forest was miles away, which meant we'd have to take a road trip to get there. After mapping out a route and sorting out the remaining necessities, we were finally ready to begin the camping trip. I can never forget that morning. I had a huge smile on my face as I picked up Nat, Cole, Susie, and Tyler, and we made our way to what I believed was going to be the greatest camping trip of all time. It was a pretty long drive, but we eventually reached the forest. I led the way, finding a clearing and setting up camp. Things went smoothly at first. We were setting up our tents and making good progress with our camping site, but that's when Natasha screamed,
"What the hell is that?"
Alarmed, we all turned to see what she was talking about, but there was nothing there. Confused, I asked her, "What's wrong, Nat? What did you see?" Natasha then responded with,
"I know I'm gonna sound really crazy, but I could have sworn I saw a 6-foot-tall rabbit standing behind those trees."
We all chuckled at Natasha's statement as we found it pretty hard to believe. Cole, who couldn't stop laughing, said,
"We've only spent 5 minutes away from civilization. Natasha is already losing it."
I remembered the worried look in Natasha's eyes as she said,
"This isn't funny, and I'm not joking around. I know what I saw."
I could tell she was concerned, so I tried to calm her down, saying, "Look, Nat, I know this is a drastic change from your normal environment, so I understand. It can be jarring at first, but you'll get used to it. Trust me, I've also seen the craziest things in the forest that weren't there." What I said managed to calm Natasha down for a while, but I could tell she was still on edge. After the tents had been set up, we split up to gather some wood that we used at night. I got paired with Natasha, and while we were gathering the wood, she told me that she felt like we were being watched. I tried to calm her down again, but it wasn't working, and that's when she looked at me and said,
"I'm not really keen on this camping trip anymore, Jace. I'm getting a really bad feeling, and I want to go home."
I knew Natasha didn't like camping, but I didn't think it was that bad, so I walked up to her and said, "Wow, Nat, I didn't know you were feeling this way. The last thing I want to do is make you feel paranoid or scared, and I don't want to put you in an environment where you're uncomfortable. So say the word. I'll personally end this whole thing and take you back home. But I'd be lying if I said that it wouldn't make me sad." Natasha seemed calmer as I spoke, so I continued with, "I promised to take you on the greatest camping trip of all time, and I still plan on delivering on that promise. I won't lie. You were one of the major reasons why I planned this whole thing. I just wanted to spend some time with you before we all went off to college. You can rest assured that you're in the best hands here, and I'm the best camping expert in the whole city. And I promise you that I'll protect you from anything lurking in the woods, be it 6-foot rabbits or Bigfoot himself." Natasha laughed at my Bigfoot joke, and then I gave her a huge hug. After that, we finished gathering up the firewood, and I held her hand on our way back to the camping site. With the tents set up and enough firewood to burn, we started the fun camping activities I had planned out. We played silly child games like Chubby Bunny and Tag. These games helped us to move past the nerves as we had a lot of fun. I can still remember us running around the forest like we were little kids that day. We ran around till the sun started to set. And after resting for a little while, we brought out the s'mores to roast. We all sat around the fire as the s'mores cooked, telling jokes and crazy high school stories. Natasha, who had been laughing the hardest, then looked at me and said,
"Okay, I'll admit I was wrong. This is the best camping trip of all time. I'm really glad you brought me on this trip, Jace."
I smiled sheepishly as Natasha talked. I then thought this would be the perfect time to tell her about my crush on her, so I said, "Hey, Nat, you know there's something I've been meaning to tell you since the 6th grade. I know this might sound a little corny, but I've had the biggest..." I never got to finish my sentence as I was abruptly cut off by some strange rustling noise coming from the trees. We all went deathly quiet as we turned our attention to the noise, and when the origin of the noise finally came to light, we were all dumbfounded as right in front of us was a 6-foot rabbit that emerged from the shadows. The massive creature that stood before us was difficult to describe. We could only make out a little of its full appearance from the campfire, but it looked like an enormous rabbit with the body of a human. The first few seconds of the encounter put us in a state of confusion and disbelief, but as the minutes passed by, we realized that it was an extremely hairy man wearing a lifelike rabbit mask. Upon the realization, Cole, who never took anything seriously, burst out laughing as he said,
"Who the hell are you, dude? And how much did they pay you to wear that silly mask and prank us?"
The man said nothing in response, so Cole continued with,
"Seriously, and I thought Nat was crazy. Either this is a bad prank, or you're on shrooms, dude. But a word of advice, only crackheads run around in the forest this late at night in a rabbit mask."
The man didn't respond again, and an eerie silence filled our camping site. I noticed that both his hands were behind his back, which meant he was holding something. But before I could point it out, the bizarre man finally looked Cole in the eyes and said,
"This is sacred ground, and you're trespassing. My divine forest isn't meant for unworthy humans to march around and pollute. You greedy and tainted humans have stolen so much from our forest to build the hell that you call civilization, and yet still you want more. My faith is what gives me the strength to do what I must, and now you will feel what it is like to be a tree that is unjustly cut down.
We didn't even have time to react to the outlandish monologue we had just heard. We were all in a state of confusion, wondering if this was still a prank. But before we could say anything, the man brought out a hatchet from his back and drove it straight into Cole's head. I can still hear the morbid crack as Cole's skull split in two. Susie let out a blood-curdling scream as she tried to get away, but the man swung the hatchet with such force that the blade cut into her torso and almost tore her apart. Terrified, we all screamed and ran into the woods, but unfortunately, Tyler wasn't fast enough. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see our assailant pounce on Tyler, bringing him to the ground and viciously hacking into his back with the hatchet. As I ran through the woods, a billion questions ran through my mind. I wondered how things suddenly got to this morbid point, and I couldn't figure out why this had happened to us. But I didn't have time to think, as all my body wanted to do was run. It wasn't long before I reached the road, and I knew my RV wasn't that far from there. I could hear Natasha running behind me, and right when she was about to reach the road, she screamed. I turned around to see our attacker looming over her with his bloody hatchet. He had taken off her leg with one of his strikes and started to chop off her limbs. It lasted for a couple of minutes, but felt like an eternity. I watched Natasha get hacked away and torn to pieces by a deranged psychopath. And amidst all the unimaginable pain and gore, I can never forget the look in her eyes. Apart from pain and fear, I also saw anger. And while she didn't say anything, the look in her eyes told me that I was the one who did this to her, and that I was responsible for all this. I willed every part of my body to help her, but my legs didn't listen. My mind told me that if I went back for her, I would also die at the hands of that man. I was a coward, and rather than doing something, I ran and didn't look back. I kept running down the road, screaming at the top of my lungs for someone or anyone to help me out of the living nightmare I had just experienced. The nearest police station sent out all officers after hearing what had happened. Numerous cops littered the forest, going through the crime scene, and a small hut was formed not far from the crime scene. The authorities managed to identify the man from a few documents that had been left behind, and his name was Alder Pine. After initial investigations, it was revealed that the name Alder Pine was an alias used by a former member of the troublesome religion called the Children of Silva. This particular religion was made up of avid worshippers of the forest. They were established in the late 70s, and Silva, which is the Latin word for forest, was the religion's motto, branded onto the skin of the religion's members. The authorities viewed them as an unruly cult, and further investigation showed that there were a couple of incidents of the group protesting at construction sites where forests needed to be demolished. They carried on their activities for 5 more years, during which they proclaimed themselves as the keepers of the forest. But their passionate movement abruptly stopped in the year 1979, when they all went mad and told their followers to live out the rest of their lives in the forests. The group hadn't been heard from ever since, and they had been completely forgotten over time until that gruesome night. With no feasible leads apart from the recorded alias, the detectives found it incredibly difficult to begin an investigation into the gruesome murders. I was frequently questioned since I was the only survivor, but since I never saw his face, I didn't help the detectives much. Even if I wanted to, all I could describe was its disturbing rabbit mask. A massive search party was formed a little while after that, and they combed through the forest for weeks on end. But even after repeated thorough searches, Alder Pine was never found. As time went on, the investigation went cold, and the families of the victims were urged to bury their kids. I will never forget the way Natasha's parents looked at me with pure hate during her funeral, as they knew I was the one who forced her to go on the camping trip. I didn't blame them, as I didn't need anyone to tell me I was the only one responsible. Once all my friends had been buried, I left the city and moved back in with my mother for some time. She tried as much as possible to get me to move on from the incident. She often told me that I couldn't have known what would have happened that night, so I wasn't responsible for it. But no matter what she said, I woke up every morning blaming myself. The guilt still eats me every day, and I can still see Natasha's eyes looking at me with hate. Some days, I wonder how many of them are still out there waiting for their unfortunate campers to tread into the territory and share the same gruesome fate. My family and friends don't like it when I say this, But I'm certain I died with my friends during that attack because ever since that night, I've been locked in an eternal chase with a 6-foot-tall, hatchet-wielding psychopath wearing a rabbit mask.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Now with McDonald's, wake up to a $4 breakfast meal deal. Wake up to a sausage McMuffin or a sausage biscuit, to hash browns, and wake up to a hot coffee. Get your $4 breakfast meal deal.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
And I know he will keep chasing me for the rest of my life. Hello everyone. We are thrilled that you have been enjoying our videos. Your support means the world to us. If you've liked what you've seen, please consider liking and subscribing to our channel. We would love to hear which one of our videos is your favorite. We're on a mission to reach 100,000 members in the SSG family, and with your help, we can achieve that goal. Thank you for being a part of our journey.
Nowadays, I see a lot of people go hiking and camping in the wilderness. Most of them are amateurs, and they do it just so they can post content to their YouTube channels. Many times, they wander into the forest without proper camping gear or equipment needed to survive in the woods. But this is a story of a beginner hiker who bit off more than he could chew. This happened in the late 1980s, when hobbies like hiking, camping, and trekking were getting popular amongst the masses. Back then, I was a park ranger in Yellowstone National Park, and as a park ranger, my team and I were experts in surviving in the forest, and we had started to notice a lot of campers going into the forest to spend some time there. On the evening of July 22, 1989, when my shift was just about to be over, a man pulled up in the parking lot of the national park in his beat-up van. As I was already walking towards my car, I greeted him and noticed that he had a big backpack in the back of his van, which he was unloading. The man was skinny, white, maybe around 5'9", with thick gray facial hair. I knew Billy, who did the night shift, would note down this man's name and the purpose of his visit to the Yellowstone National Park as a part of standard procedure. Although it was odd for the man to go into the park so close to sunset, as most campers often set up their camps by sunset and then retreat into their tents to sleep for the night, this man seemed like an odd character, but I didn't pay much attention and drove back home. The next morning when I went back to my post, I found Billy there, along with Sid, who was on the night shift as well. "Hey Billy, who was that strange man from last night?" Billy seemed to recall who I was referring to instantly. "Oh, you mean the professor. His name is Richard Graham, and he's a pretty cool man. Dude wanted to study certain types of plants that grow in the park. He drove here after his lecture at the university. That's why he was so late. He's going to be in there for at least a week." I knew Billy would become friends with any person in the world, so of course he didn't find anything weird in the man. But I decided to let it go as well, and soon the week passed, and there was no sign of Professor Graham. Usually in such a case, we used to wait for one more day and then start searching for the missing hiker. Often we find the hikers within a few hours, as they're usually not that far from the entry gates of the park. But when we began the search for Professor Graham on June 30th, 1989, I knew deep down that this was not going to be an easy search and rescue mission. We'd already alerted the local authorities. We had a team of 10 park rangers who would scout as much area as they could in search of the professor, and if we needed any more assistance, we would contact the authorities again for air support. As we all went into the forest, I had an odd feeling in my gut. Although my teammates and I had been inside the national park multiple times, we still always followed the 101s of camping, and I suspected that the professor didn't know much about camping at all. Within the first hour or so, we found a big clue: the professor's tent. It was pitched a few feet away from a cliff, and it was not just the tent that we found, but the big backpack the professor was unloading from his van was in there too, along with his sleeping bag and other essentials. Just outside the tent, there was a small portable stove and other utensils. The professor must have used them to cook some food. From the looks of it, this seemed to be the professor's first campsite, and it was just 1 mile away from the entrance to the park. But it seemed like the professor had abandoned his campsite in a frenzy and had not taken even the basic necessities he would need to survive in the forest. After locating his abandoned campsite, we knew something was extremely wrong. So we split into groups and immediately started looking for Professor Graham throughout the park. We also decided to contact the campers who had been hiking and camping nearby in the past week. Some of the campers informed us that they had seen Professor Graham's tent on the day they were passing by the area. It had already been pitched with all the stuff around it, but there was no sign of the professor. The next day, soon after sunrise, we called in air support. By then, almost 120 people were looking for the professor, but to no avail. On the second day, despite such an extensive search and rescue operation, there was no trace of the professor anywhere in the park. By the third day, his family had reached Yellowstone, and the search continued. This went on for 5 days, and even missing posters of the professor had been put up in small towns around the park. However, we had no information on his whereabouts. In such situations, if the person is not found, he is declared dead after some time. It was truly heartbreaking to see the professor's family fall apart in front of our eyes. His middle-aged wife was devastated, and his kids looked equally heartbroken. After that day, the professor was never seen, neither in any city or town, nor in the national park. 20 years later, in late 2009, when I was a few months away from my retirement as a park ranger, one evening I was about to end my shift and drive home, when a skinny man walked out of the forest. My partner Drake noticed the guy at the same time I did. The guy had a long beard and long shoulder-length matted hair, and he was naked. At first glance, he looked like a homeless dude who had just wandered into the forest. But on taking a closer look, I knew who the man was, and I was shocked. I ran out of the ranger's cabin towards the man. Drake followed me, but had no clue because I was so excited. Most of the staff back from the 1980s had been replaced by new park rangers, and I was the last of them, so naturally Drake knew nothing. "Professor Graham," I called out to the skinny man. He seemed very disoriented and unsure of his reality. But when I called him by his name, he immediately looked at me. I ran towards him with a spare towel in my hand and covered him up. "Professor, do you remember me?" I knew it was a useless question to ask him, as he had only seen me for less than a few minutes 20 years ago. But I had so many questions for the man. But first, I needed to confirm that he was indeed the professor. "Are you Professor Graham, sir?" I asked him while walking him toward our cabin. Instead of answering me, he just nodded. "Where were you, sir?" I asked him again. He just looked at me blankly and said nothing. I asked Drake to call the cops immediately while I gave the professor some warm tea I had made. I then got him dressed, and before I could ask him any further questions, two cop cars were parked in front of our cabin. There were two young cops and one old who had worked on Professor Graham's case back then as well. We were both involved in all the search and rescue operations, and he too recognized the professor. However, we had both aged significantly in the last 2 decades, while Professor Graham looked the same, not a day older. The cops decided to take the professor back to the police station, and I decided to go with them. There, they interrogated the professor and asked him what had happened 20 years ago, where he had been all this time. And all the professor kept repeating was the fact that he was taken. Taken where, he didn't know. and then he said they sent him back. Who were they? He did not know. It was as if a part of his memory was erased. He remembered going into the park and leaving, and even setting up the camp, but nothing in between. After a few evaluations by doctors and other professionals, he was allowed to go home. But to date, no one knows what happened to the professor.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
And even after a decade, I still think about this incident sometimes. What do you think happened to the professor?
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.